But now we have a good liberal example in the form of Robert F. Kennedy. So I don't feel so reluctant to have a negative attitude on American security policy with reference to the Soviet Union. What I should like to do is to talk about McNamara's 7 lean years and what he has left us, what has been going on in the Soviet Union in these 7 years, and what lies ahead so far, strictly as concerns Soviet security policy and American reaction to it. We have an analysis of the Soviet Union based on McNamara's policies, which says that we've reached that stage which can be called a detente. Now, just what a detente means is, in many minds, certainly is in mine. This detente, according to French dictionaries, a detente is that part of the revolver which releases a firing mechanism. We don't believe that is what McNamara has in mind, or indeed what his successor, Mr. Clifford, has in mind. We don't know much about Mr. Clifford, and I would be happy to talk about Mr. Clifford's problems and even to attack him, but I fear if I do that I will incite Mr. Burnham to a defense. So I will not say anything against Mr. Clifford. We can talk about what a detente really means if we can look at some of the Soviet objectives and Soviet statements. Now, Soviet objectives can be determined from an examination of their activities and also, and more meaningfully, from an examination of what they're doing. If we look at what they have been doing in the last 7 years, which is the McNamara period, you can see that they have clearly several objectives. One of these is the utilization of the National Liberation Movement, the utilization of wars less than nuclear, of wars in which the strength of the United States is not employed, in order to assist in making it impossible for the United States to be properly prepared for a war of a nuclear dimension between first-class enemies. Now, the National Liberation Movement has been described in many good, thorough, and thoughtful analyses as an attempt to further the revolution in the present period by means available to unarmed populations. And it is also a method used by the Soviet Union because the United States, to put its stature, its force organization, on a basis which will have it unprepared for World War III. Now, the United States has not moved completely in this direction, but we have had reorganization of forces and re-equipment of our forces so that we are now more prepared to fight a non-nuclear war than we have been in the past. This is desirable and should be encouraged, but it should not be encouraged if it is going to mean that we will not be able to fight and win a nuclear war should it come. The United States has based its nuclear war capabilities chiefly on strategic weapons of the intercontinental ballistic missile designation and Polaris missiles, Minutemen, and so on. As time has passed, and as our chairman has frequently pointed out in his writings, the ability of the United States to maintain superiority in this field is diminishing. And by 1971 or 1973, as a matter of fact, the Soviet Union may have a superiority in deliverable intercontinental missiles of all types. A Soviet Union has a record of attempting to overcome American superiority. We have a record of attempting to maintain what Secretary McNamara has called assured destruction and damage limitation. Now, our record in this is not as good as time has passed, as is the Soviet record of attempting to overcome our nuclear superiority. The American nuclear strategic force has been built, and we apparently have reached a plateau, which many people think we have the assured destruction, and having attained it, it will be ours forever. Well, we all know that that is not true, that every day is a new day, that you have to conquer each day anew. As time passes, as each day dawns, the Soviets are building and building with this in mind, with the idea of overcoming American superiority and attaining their own. This is a message to Clark Clifford, that each day has to be looked at as another, that there is no plateau in technology, that there is no victory in nuclear balance that is won permanently. It has to be maintained and it has to be improved as time passes. Now, those of us who take this sort of Cassandra attitude about the possibility of the Soviets gaining superiority as time passes are reminded that the Soviets do not have a large Polaris or Poseidon system. Well, they're building that too. They do not have a deployed Polaris or Poseidon system as we do. We have some events of recent days that indicate not only that the Soviets are building the Poseidon or Polaris type system, but also that they are attempting to find means to overcome the Poseidon advantage that we have. In the June War, in the Mediterranean, and in the time following, we noticed the loss of a Israeli submarine and a French submarine. I cannot explain these losses, and I would not attempt to, but part of the Cold War is that you attempt to find means in the Cold War to fight the hot war. And one of the means that we must find, or that they must find, is how to locate, neutralize, and destroy our Poseidon system. Perhaps, and of course it has to be only a perhaps, what has happened in the Mediterranean with the French and Israeli submarines is an omen for what will happen with the Poseidon system as World War III approaches. We have also the Soviet fractional orbital bombardment system development, and a statement by Mr. McNamara that it's an inefficient weapon. It costs more to get it into orbit, it's less accurate, and so on. Nevertheless, there is a Soviet development, putting us pretty much in the position of having to say that every orbited vehicle must be considered hostile. And if you consider every orbited missile hostile, then it is necessary to find a method for destroying orbited missiles, whether fractional, continuing, or whatever. Now, we have such a program. It is in the development stage. It is not in the deployed stage, but it is imperative that the United States, for its own security, take such an attitude. Take an attitude that orbiting missiles are hostile and need to be destroyed. In a sense, this sounds, I'm sure, very belligerent, but it has some history behind it. The loss of the submarines, which we discussed, and the loss of some Soviet missiles or some Soviet orbiting vehicles by accident may be a point in case here. The Soviets also have the ABM deployment, the ballistic missile defense deployment, and we have talked about this enough. I think that nothing more needs to be said here. And if anything more need be said, one of the things to do is to read Dr. Downey's American Security Council articles. The point is that they are deploying, have deployed a ballistic missile defense. And that we have not, but we are talking about deploying a ballistic missile defense against the Chinese threat. The Soviets have a program of Polaris, or Poseidon neutralization, or fractional orbital bombardment system, an anti-missile defense. They have a program of bomber neutralization. Now, this may sound like talking in the 1930s, but bombers, particularly with a standoff capability, still have a role in modern war. We can, if the Soviets could find a bomber neutralization program, their defense problems are greatly simplified. If they have only to worry about incoming missiles and not about bombers and other weapons, their job is that much easier. And in a large sense, we have neutralized the bomber problem for them. We have not discontinued, but we have been very active in our development of advanced manned strategic aircraft. We have the strategic version of the TFX, the F-111, and it's being tried out on a tactical basis in Vietnam, but we do not know its strategic capability, but we are pretty sure that its strategic capability is considerably less than would be a follow-on aircraft to the B-70. Soviet Union is also in the business of neutralizing American carriers. Now, this is a job that is done by continued surveillance, utilization of aircraft, computers, and so on, so that the Soviet Union at any time, and that is the day before the war starts, or the week before the war starts, will know where the American carriers are and will have, they hope, the weapons necessary to neutralize them. The response here, of course, would seem to be obvious. The American response would seem to be obvious. That is, greater security for carriers in a time of peace. And also, building of carriers with a nuclear power plant for longer cruising range, for greater time at sea, and so on. We have the Soviet planning on the basis of preparation for war. We have the United States planning on the basis of preparation for detente and improved relations. We all hope that relations will be improved and that there won't be any war. Or as Mr. McMillan said in 1939 when he returned from the Soviet Union, there ain't going to be no war. But you cannot operate on the basis of hope alone. We have to operate on the basis of action. Now, we've talked about some of the actions, and I would now like to talk about some of the statements. Mr. Reznev is the head man over there, and he has said on numerous occasions that the source of war is imperialism, and if you want to get rid of war, get rid of imperialism. Now, in the 50th anniversary speech, this is the 50th anniversary of the revolution, Mr. Brezhnev said the following. These are quotations, and I'm sure you're familiar with them, but it is necessary, I believe, to quote them because that is the only way to get the real flavor of what the communists are talking about in 1967 and 1968. Quotation here. Our foreign policy is internationalist because the interests of the Soviet people coincide with those of the working masses of all countries. It is infused with a spirit of solidarity with the revolutionary, progressive forces throughout the world and represents an active factor of the class struggle on an international arena. Now, if you would listen to the Washington Post, luckily you don't have to read that paper out here, but if you would listen to this, you would think that these were sort of 7th of November speeches and that these people who are making these do not really believe them. They continue to make them. Imperialism, says Brezhnev, has not changed its aggressive nature. It remains the embodiment of the worst reaction of bloody violence and aggression, and presents a serious threat to peace and security everywhere. And we cannot, nor have we the right, to forget this. The crimes of the U.S. military in Vietnam bring back to memory the atrocities of the fascists. And with reference to the National Liberation War in Vietnam, which I think is designed to make the United States prepare for the wrong sort of war, Mr. Brezhnev said, weapons, munitions, food, clothing, transport facilities, and equipment are all concrete manifestations of the solidarity of the socialist countries which are helping the Vietnamese in their heroic struggle. Mr. Brezhnev puts great stress on the point that NATO must be weakened, and indeed it has. He puts great stress on the point that the Germans are a source of Nazism and that they must be fought by all peace-loving forces. Now, this is a message that is not entirely without supporters in this country. If I might add a quotation from the chief of the Soviet naval forces who said, American press sources charge that the Soviet Union maintains a fleet of spy ships. Let them catch one and prove it. That's the sort of challenge that we might very well take up. The point of these quotations and the many others that I would like to give, but our chairman is a very strict one and is going to cut me off here in about an hour or so. Quotations indicate, I believe, that the Soviet Union is thinking of the world as it has always thought in a conflict situation. They think of the Americans, the imperialists, as enemies. We do not. If I might be excused, please excuse me for a behavioral analysis. Behavioralism in political science rears its head from time to time. The only thing that we might say in this respect is that one were to remember that persons such as Adam Yarmolinsky, Mr. Nitze, Mr. Rostow, Mr. Bundy, Mr. Gilpatrick have been making some of our security decisions than maybe the behavioralists have something to say. After all, the American approach to security, that is the acceptance of the detente line, is one that passes all understanding. Thank you.